I'm very interested to go back and listen to this episode and listen to just all the awful things I say. Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's an award-winning podcast about the history and culture of desert decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. Max, how you doing? How you doing, Max? Why aren't you answering this question? Hello? Max, are you there? What's going on, buddy?
Big gulp of water. And then you rushed the intro.
I did. I rushed it because I really wanted to goof on you. Sorry. What I said was, welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's an award-winning podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. I am here on a Zoom call with my good friend, Max. My name is Dorian, and I just saw him take a big gulp of water out of his water bottle and just thought it'd be very fun to rush on in there. You got dunked on, sucker. How do you feel?
Yeah. Well, now I feel hydrated, so I feel better. But...
Well, that's good. Hydration is key. You feeling good otherwise? Life is good as it can be,
as good as it's gonna get for the next... It's weird to think that we're gonna have a couple months probably of doing Zoom podcasting.
Yeah,
I'm excited to record in person.
I am too. I miss a lot of people's faces, and your face is, like, you know, up at the top of the list.
Near. You know.
I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. It doesn't take precedence over my girlfriend or my immediate family. But, you know, you're up in the mix. You're giving them some hot competition.
I'm contending.
I did hear some good news. I read an article today that had a bunch of projections for, like, based on how individual states have handled the pandemic and, you know, actually followed through with social distancing and all the things you're supposed to do. What is their projected peak? And for Ohio, our projected peak is April 12th, according to this study. So that means, you know, less than a week from right now when we're recording this is supposed to be the pandemic at its absolute worst, which in theory means that we'll only have another month or so of quarantine and social distancing and all of this stuff. God willing, that's the case. Because I'm going a little crazy.
Yeah, the thought of, like, staring at a screen in my house for another 2 months is getting to be big. But
yeah,
I don't know. We've done a good job.
So. Yeah, and the podcast has been rolling along, which has been pretty cool. And people have been very supportive and, like, you know, talking to us in the Discord and stuff. We appreciate y'all. Yeah. All the fans listening.
Just a quick little pre-dead shout out to all the essential workers like you, Dorian.
I don't know that me working for a major coffee retailer should qualify as an essential job. I have some actually pretty strong opinions about how that's not the case, but I know for a lot of us, like, in my mind, the absolute essential workers are, like, the healthcare professionals and, like, people on the front lines dealing with the most risky situations. Like, those are the heroes in my mind. For a lot of us, it's just, like, straight up, I need to pay the bills somehow and I have this job, so I'm going to do it. And it sucks. Like, a lot of people are in this position where it's like, I have to work. I'm not a hero. I just, like, need to work to survive. And a lot of people aren't so fortunate to have a job right now. So we're very eager for just all of this shit to be done with and go back to life as normal. But yeah, I don't know. I'm grateful that I can at least make the most of it and get by and pay bills and afford to put food on the table and whatnot. Man, we got bleak fast, huh?
Compassion to all those who are hurting right now. Yeah. Hopefully we'll be able to give people something to smile about a little bit, or at least learn something cool.
Yeah, absolutely. With that in mind, should we get into it? You've prepared some research for us on some death-related topic. And if what I'm seeing here on the show notes you've given me is any indication, you've actually taken a suggestion from one of our listeners.
I did. We'll get to that. But have you ever been to a monster truck rally?
Oh, yeah. A long time ago.
What'd you think of it? What were your impressions?
I really want to go again. I don't know if any rallies are happening right now, given the current state, but I would really like to go. It was loud and awesome, and there were like big machines flying through the air and crushing smaller machines. Love to see it.
That's all I remember. I went to one in maybe like 2009.
Uh-huh.
And I had club seats because one of like a friend of a friend or something had club access where this monster truck rally was happening. And they don't sell club level seats for monster truck rallies. So we got in there super easy. And I mean, they are very loud.
Yeah.
So with like monster truck rallies being at the forefront of this right now, can I get you to announce the episode title for us in like a monster truck rally announcer voice?
Yeah. Yeah, I was really hoping that that's where this weird segue buildup was going. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Let me just clear my throat a little bit. This is a big moment for me.
Grave Digger!
Was that pretty good?
That was great.
Okay, good.
I saw Grave Digger.
Hell yeah. I love Grave Digger. So we're just going to talk about the monster truck, right? And its cool paint job and all the cool shit it's crushed.
All the flips.
Hell yeah.
No. We are going to talk about Grave Diggers right now, though. So before we get into it, I do want to give props to Noctua and KC on our Discord who suggested this idea, threw it forward. We're really hype about it there. So, yeah, we're going to talk about Grave Diggers today.
Getting hype for Grave Digger.
Before we get too hyped, though, let's crack into the topic with the official Pre-Dead Boys Crack Into the Topic moment brought to you today by La Kroger again.
I just want to give a quick shout out. Target has a brand of seltzer called Good and Gather. I think that it's an actual Target. Yeah, it's Target brand. But they have some weird flavor seltzers. This one is cranberry citrus, and it's very good. Ooh. Highly recommended. Anyway, yeah, let's crack into it.
Crack into it. Perfectly synced up.
Ha. Huh. Yet again.
3 for 3 at this point. Now, I do want to... What are you doing?
I'm doing finger guns.
Why?
Because I'm just excited, man.
You're getting that energy back.
Yeah.
So I'm in the office of my place, mm-hmm. and since it's like 70 degrees outside, it's already getting toasty in here.
Well, I'm wearing a tank top because I kind of anticipated warmer weather, you know, might need this. You're wearing a black shirt. It's a very cool shirt. It's a mountain goat shirt, but you're going to attract heat wearing that.
Well, right now I have it hiked up to like my midriff, but you can't see it. Like a belly shirt at this point.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I saw the movement and it's like the frame was conveniently censoring your nipples, which I really appreciated that it was. We need social distancing to be over. We're getting very weird.
I'm gonna take my pants off. So I do want to draw the distinction that this episode is specifically going to be about gravediggers. So we're not going to be talking about other burial workers in this episode. And gravediggers are, just like the name implies, the people who dig graves. Like us. Like we're big fans of graves.
Oh, like you dig graves.
It's just a fun little joke.
It's not enough that you threw me off the first time by promising that we were going to talk about monster trucks and then breaking that promise. You got to mess with me again.
Breaking your heart on all stages over here.
Yeah, thanks for that.
So we're only talking about people who dig graves in this episode. But quick shout out to all... Physically dig graves. Shout out to all the Sextons out there, especially Cleveland Cavaliers guard Colin Sexton. It's a fun basketball joke. I'm losing it, man. I don't have any sports. I got no sports.
Oh, side note.
So on the surface,
speaking of sports,
no,
I understand. I sympathize. You have no sports to talk about. In a bizarre twist of fate, I do potentially have my sport to talk about. Have you heard about how the UFC is going to have a pay-per-view potentially hosted on a private island purchased by their president, Dana White? Have you heard about this?
I did hear about that, which is insane. It's just like an island?
Yeah. I think that there's some other like option that's coming out now of like, I think the current plan is that they're going to have it in a casino that's on native ground. So it's not sanctioned by the United States government. Super sketchy.
Oh my God.
But the backup plan, if that didn't work out, was Dana White literally was in talks and just purchased an island. Like literally the setup for, you know, Bloodsport and Enter the Dragon and Mortal Kombat and like every martial arts tournament you could possibly think of, that was almost real life.
Thunderdome.
Yeah. 2020 is absolute insanity. Anyway, sorry. More updates on that to come in the next few weeks, because that's just the most insane shit. Like being a fan of combat sports is always kind of a wild ride, but the past couple weeks have been especially wild.
I'm going to lose my mind if that happens. I'm going to be very happy for you in particular.
Me too.
So on the surface, I realize this episode might seem like it's going to be as straightforward as trains, but I was able to find some pretty neat stuff. And COVID has actually brought some grave digging focused topics to the forefront at the moment, which is cool. But real quick, do you want to run through the Wikipedia description of grave digging? Nothing earth shattering. I just don't like when you have to go a long time without doing something.
I'm sorry, did you say earth shattering?
I did say earth shattering. Oh, I get it.
It was kind of a pun. Earth shattering? I don't know.
That's fun.
That's a stretch, but...
It's fun.
Oh, thank you. A grave digger is a cemetery worker who is responsible for digging a grave prior to a funeral service. In municipal and privately owned cemeteries, grave diggers may be low-paid, unskilled, and temporary laborers, or they may be well-paid, trained, and professional careerists, as their duties may include landscaping tasks and courteous interactions with mourners and other visitors. In some countries, grave digging may be done by landscaping workers for the local council or local authority. Grave diggers use a variety of tools, ranging from shovels and sod cutters to backhoes and heavy machinery to excavate the gravesites. Typically, they will put the soil in a wooden box off to the side and, after the funeral, will backfill the soil and ensure safety to avoid collapse of the soil in the future.
Yeah, I told you it wasn't going to be anything wild. But there is a certain art to this work. I've known quite a few people who have worked in landscaping, and like I can't begin to take care of plants at close to the level that they can. And I will also say that being able to make yourself inconspicuous while you're waiting around for other people to finish doing something is like a real skill as well. I think the last funeral I went to, I didn't notice that the cemetery caretakers were sitting in like a nondescript truck off to the side. But after the service, I like circled around the yard a couple times and saw them zip out once everybody left and start like filling the grave in. And I was like, wow, they did a good job.
Nice.
So I guess we can jump through some of the history. But really it's a lot of like, well, people have always died and people have always wanted other people to dig graves. So it was a job somebody else had to do. But there were points where grave diggers weren't completely written off by society. There were folks called fossors who were grave diggers that worked for the Christian church in the Roman catacombs. Around the year 300, people who were writing about the church and were writing like accounting, who were accountants for the church at the time, were listing these fossors as members of the clergy, which was kind of cool because it meant they were viewed not as like undesirable, unskilled laborers, but as, you know, people who had jobs within the church. But again, that's really most of the overview history stuff. And fossors are like one of the few groups of gravediggers who have been like, quote unquote, esteemed by society. And as I'm sure you can guess, a lot of the history of gravedigging is pretty dark and has a lot of marginalized people in it. And we're going to do our best to highlight some of those marginalized people as we go through this. I feel like this is our most direct to it episode ever.
That's very cool. I like this plan.
So let's start with one of the oldest grave digging traditions. And it's another one where a lot of respect has been given to the grave diggers. It is the Hevra Kedisha. The Hevra Kedisha is a Jewish organization that basically takes over after someone dies, and they care for the body after death. It's considered to be one of the most honorable tasks in Judaism. And the thought is that you are giving a service to another person that can never be repaid. So the idea is like you are providing a completely altruistic service. So a really interesting thing about this role is that because it's intended to be like unrepayable and like thankless, for lack of a better term, a lot of the people who do it work anonymously. So I found a really cool article about what the Hevra Kedisha ceremony and process is like, if you want to read it. This is from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency, and it was, kind of unsurprisingly, published anonymously.
A rabbi calls the contact for the Hevra Kedisha and lets it know a ceremony needs to be performed. As Jewish burials take place as quickly as possible, there's a small window of opportunity. The timing is tight, so members of the Hevra Kedisha tend to be retired or have a flexible work schedule. Typically, there is no interaction with the family of the deceased, in keeping with the tradition that the mitzvah is performed with no expectation of credit accruing to those who perform it. After the ritual cleansing, preparation, and dressing of the body, it needs to be placed in the coffin. The Hevra Kedisha inspects the coffin to make sure it has holes in its bottom to hasten the decomposition of the body. The grave is dug, and the body is laid to rest. The Hevra Kedisha stands with the deceased between life and death, between the here and the hereafter, between the present and the distant past of Solomon's temple, between Gehenna and Paradise. Afterward, there is a sense of completion like no other I've experienced. The deceased's life has officially come to an end. The Hevra Kedisha has prepared the body for the next step in its journey. The soul has already departed and moved on, and I'm usually filled with hope that when the time comes for me, I will be as carefully tended to.
Isn't that like a cool death-positive ritual?
Yeah, I'm adding this to the list of things that I would consider for my own death. I guess not, I don't know, I'm not really Jewish by any kind of ethnic or I don't know. If I am a Christian, is that close enough to the Judeo-Christian thing that I could get a Hevra Kadisha? Or is that not an option?
I don't know how strict they are, but it does involve a lot of the traditional washing rituals. So I don't know if you'd qualify exactly.
Probably not. And you know what I had for lunch today was actually a pretty disgusting amount of bacon, so...
That'll do it.
But this is very cool.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting to kind of see the break between this really positive death ritual and, like, our Western, like, bummer death stuff. Because they both involve the body being prepared away from the family, and they both involve, like, cleaning and dressing that doesn't involve the family. And I don't really know why this is much more, like, inspiring or positive feeling than the, like, medical cleansing is. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about why that might be?
I mean, if they're... I think that if you have a very, I guess, stringent set of guidelines in your religion, if there is spiritual significance to the way that things are cleaned or washed or something like that, better to have that be in the hands of someone who also professes that same faith and carries out those same rituals, you know, the same way that I would trust someone qualified for a job to do the job rather than just some random well-intentioned person to, you know, if my toilet's broken, it doesn't matter how nice you are to me, Max, I'm still going to call a plumber. Like, that doesn't mean you're not my friend. That doesn't mean I hate you. It's just that you're not a plumber. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. And a very valid one. And I think there's probably something in it.
Don't touch my toilet.
There's probably something in it too of like a Western, what's that called? Like a Western embalming practice is just making the body look nice for when it's in a coffin, you know? But this is actually preparing the body and soul for the afterlife, which I guess the spiritual component of that probably makes it a lot more comforting to know that someone trained is dealing with the body, you know? So if any, if any of our Jewish listeners out there have any ideas, send them along. I'd love to hear input and thoughts about this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, God. I just scrolled down too far and it jumped.
I accidentally deleted my entire computer.
I spilled sulfuric acid on my laptop. So, switching gears a bit here. Do you remember when we covered corpse scandals two episodes back and talked about Heart Island in New York City?
Yes, I do.
So it looks like we may have wanted to wait on covering that because due to COVID-19, New York City is considering, and as far as I could find, they're only considering it at this point, digging trench graves for coronavirus victims on Heart Island.
Wow.
The plan would be to use prisoners from Rikers Island to do it. And those prisoners will get paid $6 an hour.
That's crazy. Yeah, I was afraid you'd go there too. Because I've started hearing about, you know, a lot of places potentially considered for basically mass graves of coronavirus victims.
Mm-hmm.
And New York has been hit harder than any other city in the United States. They're saying that New York State is like projected to have the highest death toll of any state. That article I mentioned earlier, New York is, I don't remember if it was the numbers so far or if it was the projected numbers, but they either have or are expected to have twice as many deaths from coronavirus as California, despite California having like almost twice as much population. So it's like there is a serious problem in New York City of like, what do they do with their dead? And I was afraid it was going to involve some shady bullshit with you know, exploiting prisoners, but
yeah. So as far as I could tell, this hasn't been officially put in motion yet, but like you mentioned, New York City morgues are filling up really, really fast. And I think this is something we'll want to keep an eye on over the next few weeks. And it pertains to our topic today because it kind of highlights the fact that most people consider grave digging to be like a pretty low form of labor, you know, like it's not a job that's desirable to have. It's a job you have to basically, like you said, exploit prison labor to get done.
Right.
So kind of in light of that, let's turn our attention to some of these bits that show up in grave digging history and hopefully highlight some of the people who were forced to do this because no one else wanted to. So I've attached a photo here in your notes if you want to scroll down.
Aw.
This is a happy one.
She's sweet.
You get a... I feel like this is going to be the episode photo. But if you want to describe what you're seeing here.
It's a sweet old lady who's like hunkered down and digging a grave. And she's grinning ear to ear. It's that classic coffin shape, too, of like the jutting corners on either side.
Yeah, like the tapered ends.
Right. But yeah, I love this. You're absolutely right. This will almost certainly be the episode photo.
So this is a photo taken in 1944 of a woman named Josephine Smith. And she was 84 when this photo was taken. And she really, really liked to dig graves.
She enjoyed it.
Yeah, she became a fan of this. but it came out of necessity because she lived in a small town in Victoria, Australia. So her husband was a gravedigger. But then he had some medical issues and was unable to get out in the field and dig graves. And they could not find anyone else to do it. So she had to take over. Like, they could not find a single other person in this town who wanted to do this job. But it had to get done. So this 84-year-old woman had to take over. She would say when she was interviewed that she felt the task kept her fit and gave her a daily workout, which is pleasant. But for as delightful as this photo is, it does highlight one of the big issues with deeming grave digging like a weird profession. When we do that, when we treat grave diggers as like weirdos or like people who like hanging around dead bodies, it forces vulnerable people who might not be able to find work otherwise to take this job as a last resort. And that's actually exactly what happened with a woman named Catherine Burns. She lived in what was, at the time, the small city of Porterville in like the middle of California. So in the late 1800s, small cities like Porterville could be hammered by disease at any point. If you had like cholera roll through or anything like that, your town would be like ruined. So in 1887, there was an outbreak of diphtheria, and it hit the town, and it just started like ripping apart the population. Children were especially vulnerable, and there were accounts of families losing 5 children over the course of a single year.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's like pretty unbelievable. But like with any epidemic, an outbreak causes people to withdraw from others. You don't want to like interact with people or reach out to help. So this means that a lot of people who themselves were given severe respiratory infections from diphtheria had to bury family members by themselves. So like you are already struggling to breathe and then you're having to go out and dig 3 graves.
Yeah, Jesus.
So this is obviously not sustainable, but there's not a lot of people around. So a local cemetery had to get pretty creative, and here's what they did.
During the disease outbreak, new cemeteries had to be established, since many families felt graves could be cross-contaminated by the disease. As a result, the Wilcox Cemetery opened its gates. After the original owner died, it was inherited by Margaret Kincaid, who was only 20 years old at the time. She kept the grounds, maintained the records, and dug the graves. Unfortunately, the increase in deaths quickly meant she was unable to keep up with digging all the graves herself. Because fear of the disease was so rampant, Kincaid was unable to find any men to hire as gravediggers. Any reasonably fit man was able to find other construction work, and the added stigma of the diphtheria epidemic did not help. Eventually, Kincaid decided to hire women to help out with the work, since many women had no other way to find employment.
Yeah, so this is where women like Catherine Burns come in, and they ended up becoming gravediggers at these small town cemeteries. So they would come to work and just be like loaded with antiseptics and disinfectants, and they would be the ones who would be working, transporting, and burying these bodies. These were the women who were providing essential grave digging and burial services at a time nobody else would. And I mean, that's commendable. I wish it wouldn't have been like the case that they had to find work this way because they were barred from having any other jobs.
Yeah, it's not an ideal situation, but it is interesting to draw parallels from this to our modern day, that a lot of the undesirable jobs need done and they're necessary work. And once again, I am like, quote unquote, an essential worker working in a coffee shop. And I don't think that should qualify. But every day that I go in to like my coffee shop is inside of a grocery store where it's like there's people who are working the front end, ringing people out, helping them find groceries, helping stock food, providing food and cleaning supplies to people who need it, who, you know, for them, it wasn't just purely out of the good of their heart. It was, I need to get by. I need to make a living. And I don't think that makes those people any less admirable. I think that it's really cool that people step up to the plate and do this work. Like, just because they didn't have other more leisurely options to take doesn't mean that, you know, it takes away from the significance of what they're able to provide for other people.
Yeah, it really highlights the fact that it's more of a societal issue than a personal thing, you know?
Right.
Back then, if you were a woman, period, and you weren't married, you didn't really have much of a chance to make an income. And since society was kind of just like, you had to go out and find something to do, and this was the job available, it sucks. But yeah, it's just like such a weird social like refusal to help people out that they have to take these really undesirable jobs.
Right.
Stigmatized jobs, I guess.
Right. All the respect in the world to these women and all the other, you know, essential workers in times of epidemics.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, they're the ones doing the work here.
Right.
So really just a couple loose ends to tie up from here. Some fun stuff. So that's nice.
Love fun stuff.
Yeah. This is from an Atlas Obscura article. But did you know that there's a whole gravedigger bar in Dublin, Ireland?
Oh.
It's the John Cavanaugh Pub. And it looks like a really just neat, divey place. Got it.
Dude, that does look dope. That looks like a lot of fun. They got a cool, colorful mural above the bar. It's all wood furnishing that looks real nice. I like it. What did you say it was called again?
The John Cavanaugh Pub.
So named after the American Supreme Court Justice, or...
Is his first name John?
Oh, no, Robert, I'm thinking Cavanaugh. Of Brett. It's Brett Cavanaugh. Brett. I'm an idiot. Brett's a dumbass name.
Brett's a dumbass name for a 60-year-old man.
No, Brett's a fine name, but he's a piece of shit anyway. Okay. Okay, the joke didn't land because it was a stupid joke. That's okay. This bar still looks dope.
Yeah, the bar looks great. And that's where all the gravediggers in Dublin, Ireland hung out.
Hell yeah.
So the bar, or pub, the pub is located right next to the Glasnevin Cemetery, and it opened in 1833. So it's been around for a while.
And this photo is modern day that you sent me. It looks pretty current.
Yep, it's currently owned by the 8th generation of the family.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So Glasnevin Cemetery was one of the first all-faith cemeteries in Dublin, which means you didn't have to have membership of a particular church to be buried there. And that meant that it was really, really busy a lot of the time. Folks were getting buried right there constantly. And a busy cemetery means that the gravediggers who work there are also going to be busy. So having a bar like right at the end of the property meant that, this is like lore in the bar, they had a wall that had a window built into it that looked directly into the cemetery behind the bar. And gravediggers, when they had finished digging a grave, would just walk up and knock on the window. And then the bartender would reach out of the window and pass them a pint of beer. And then when they finished their work for the day, they would just walk in through the front door and pay their tab and just keep drinking or whatever.
Take a load off. You worked hard.
But it is cool. I mean, it looks like a fun little pub to go to.
Are we allowed to check it out?
We are. It is still almost like an industry bar. Like, people who work at that cemetery still use that bar frequently, which is cool. I like that it's still, like, it's kept its original use. I think that's mm-hmm. neat. But yeah, it's supposedly got a bunch of, like, hauntings as well because of the spirits that, like, flow over from the cemetery, which is very funny.
I like to hear that. I would very much like to visit this place.
If we ever make it over to Ireland, we really got to go, man. That'd be tight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just some other quick hits. There have been some famous people who have been gravediggers. Abraham Lincoln was a church sexton out in Illinois, which makes sense.
Is he, I mean, he's made a couple appearances across many episodes of our podcast now. Do we add him to the pre-Dead Boys Hall of Fame?
I think we did when we originally talked about him.
Oh, well, I need to update my notes. I thought we then. Did. Boing.
Because he showed up in the trains episode when we talked about the Abraham Lincoln death train.
Right, but he's basically only appeared in our podcast having already been dead. Like,
that
people
is true.
Fucking with his grave and his body being shipped around in a train. But that's this right. time around, as a gravedigger, he's doing it for himself. He's putting that work in. I think now is when we formally induct him into the pre-dead Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay, let's coronate him then.
All right. He's going in right after Tommy Marsh and Philip K. Clover.
Hell yeah. So this is very physical work. And do you remember that fun fact about Abraham Lincoln that explains why he was, like, really good at digging graves?
No. Is it because he was tall?
Because he was, like, a state champion wrestler.
Oh, that's right. Who may or may not have invented the suplex.
Yeah, this is how he trained for wrestling. Was going out and shoveling dirt while digging graves, which is awesome.
Dude, that's... Okay, in pro wrestling, the whole idea is that you're coming up with a character. You're creating this backstory and all of these elements to actually create an entertaining character, right? All this time, people have just been making shit up just to try to get as cool as Abraham Lincoln, the guy who trained for wrestling by digging graves, and nobody's even come close to that. That's phenomenal. That's the most amazing setup, the most amazing backstory you could possibly have as a wrestler.
What's your, in wrestling, what's your story called? Like, what's the term for it? Is there a term for it?
There might be. I'm not super...
Your gimmick.
Okay, yeah. Well, a gimmick is a little bit like, it's more than just the backstory. It's like, it's your brand. It's your, like, what is the funny shtick thing about you?
Okay.
I think it's just backstory. I don't know. I'm gonna ask one of my good friends who's like a big... We've actually been like toying with the idea of making a podcast together because he makes a podcast with some friends, but he and I are toying with the idea of making a wrestling podcast. It would basically be him telling me what's going on because I don't watch wrestling with any degree of diligence. I basically just catch old Macho Man promo clips on YouTube and that's about it.
The cream of the crop.
You've shown me quite a few of those.
Yeah.
So if you were a wrestler and your gimmick was that you were a gravedigger and that's how you like trained, do you think you'd be a face or a heel?
Hmm. Because Abe was, I mean, he got assassinated, so he was probably a heel, right? Like, you know, in his day, people were kind of
if
like...
If you're a racist, ooh, he was a heel.
Right, but everybody was racist back then. No, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like a heel thing, because it's like kind of dark and grim, you know? Digging graves and... burying other wrestlers. But I don't know. It'd be kind of a good face, you know, of like the upstanding young gravedigger who also buries you.
He's removing the stigma. He's burying people who stigmatize death industry workers.
Yeah, that makes him my favorite wrestler.
Some other good famous people who have been gravediggers. Tom Petty.
Really?
Yeah.
So before he was a heartbreaker, he was a gravedigger?
Yep.
That's what's up.
Also, Joe Strummer from The Clash.
That's badass. That's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I guess, like, he said that it just gave him a lot of time to think and, like, write lyrics. Like, he would just be out thinking while digging graves.
Man.
And he would jot some stuff down on, like, a pad of paper he kept in his pocket.
That is awesome.
Yeah. He also supposedly ran a couple marathons in his lifetime, which is wild. Joe Strummer said he ran the Paris Marathon, but he had also claimed to have had like 16 beers the night before and not trained in 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, he was digging graves. What other training do you need to do? This is the Uber fitness plan. Just dig graves.
I'm going to get into that. I'm going to start like doing my lifting by lifting dirt.
Have you ever watched the show Nathan For You?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, did you see the episode where he tried to run a scam where he like started a moving company, but then the workers were just people that signed up and paid him because they thought it was a fitness program?
Yeah, I have. I thought you were going to talk about the episode where he does the pet cemetery.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, that one's really good, but go on.
No, I just thought that this would be a good scam. It's like sign people up to dig graves as a fitness plan. And then we don't have a need for grave diggers anymore. I'm a genius.
Well, you know, that's all I had in the notes. So maybe we should start thinking about wrapping this up so we can go work on that project.
Start our budding enterprise here.
Scam business.
That we're announcing on a podcast is a scam. Yeah. How could this possibly fail? Anyway, yeah. Max makes a good point. We have some things to some notes to leave you on. First of all, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate you taking your quarantine time or your time off from your essential work to listen to our podcast. We love hearing from you. We loved hearing episode suggestions, including the one from Noctua and Casey for this episode. So any questions, comments, episode suggestions, that sort of thing, we would love to hear from you. We are at PreDeadBoys on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us predeadboys@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook. Just search for the group PreDeadBoys Podcast and join our Discord, where we'll send you an invite if you just kind of email or message us on any of those venues.
It's really not as intimidating as it sounds to join.
Yeah.
As someone who doesn't do tech stuff.
you've been getting by in the Discord. You're like taking part in conversations and navigating it pretty well for someone who says that he has no idea how to use it.
Yeah. I'm learning.
We're all kind of discovering how to use new technology in this day and age, though. But yeah, jump on our Discord with us. It's a good time. If you would like to support what we do, we would really appreciate financial support. We have a Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/predeadboys and pledge $1 or $5 a month, you'll get some extra goodies, some bonus episodes. By the time this episode is out, we should have part one of our episode on the Black Parade available only for $5 per month patrons. So yeah, if you want to continue to hear our voices talking about death positivity and stuff like that, that's a good place to do that. Let's give a shout out to some new patrons.
Ooh, I like that.
At $5 per month, we have Michael Shero and Lisa Ormiston. What's up, cousin? Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike and Lisa.
Yeah. We had a little family get together around Thanksgiving, and she was gabbing about our podcast and asking questions. And it was great because her mom, my aunt, is also very supportive of the podcast and loves the show. And I think that my uncle was hearing some of the conversation, was just kind of like, oh, weird. Like he seemed a little put off by it. But yeah, I am very blessed to have, you know, family members who are super supportive, not just financially, but just like gabbing about this podcast and sharing it with other people. I know you do too. I know that your mom changed her phone wallpaper to one of the patron only wallpapers.
That's very funny. Yeah. I like it.
Kudos to your mom. She's great. We love our families. We also love other patrons who are not our family, including Emmy, who upped her pledge from $1 per month to $5 per month.
Aww.
She did that on April 1st. And so I was kind of like waiting and checking it. I was like, is this a goof? But it's not a goof. She is really that generous to us. So thank you so much, Emmy.
Thanks, Emmy.
You're a champ. You can also help us out by, if you want to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. If you do that, we will read it here on the show. And even if you don't want to do those things or give money, if you just tell people about the show, we don't advertise. We spread this purely through word of mouth, like the coronavirus.
Oh, boy.
That's right. This podcast is a pandemic. This is an extremely poor taste joke that I'm gonna jump ship on and maybe edit out. Or maybe not. Anyway, tell people about this podcast. If there's a particular episode that you like, we would really appreciate it. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com or on Spotify. Also, dude, Brat Curse's frontman, Brian Baker, put out a solo album called Outdoor Drama. Have you listened to this yet?
I have not.
It's very good. It's very, like, definitely takes a little bit of a step outside of other Brat Curse stuff, but if you enjoy Brat Curse, you'll enjoy that too. Make sure you look that up. And that's going to do it. Wait, is that it? Is that going to do it for us? Yeah.
I think it will.
That'll do it for us. We've got a new business to start in this thriving, bustling economy that we're in.
Yeah, we got to go bully other small businesses away from their loans that they need to actually sustain good ideas to start a dumb scam business. So,
yeah. We need their money so that we can trick people into digging graves while we skim off the top and live the high life.
Living high on the hog.
Yes, yes. Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're going to rot.
And wash your hands.
And wash your damn hands.
You know,
I don't think so.
He's in my group, but he lives next door to me.
Oh, nice.
He got, let me see this. So he proposed on the 31st, or no, he proposed on the 1st, which was wild.
On April Fool's Day?
Yeah.
Respect.
And we were talking last night about like what their plan is. They're getting married on the 16th.
Whoa, of this month?
Yeah.
Whoa, all right.
Just because they're like, well, we don't know when it would be, when we'd be able to have anything up next, so.
Yeah, damn. What are they going to do ceremony-wise? I mean, like, is someone going to be there to officiate the wedding?
He's going to marry them in his backyard.
Hell yeah.
They're each going to have a witness.
That's what's
up. Rock and roll, yeah.